My name is Jamie Holt, and I am the Chief Communications Officer at the district. And I want to thank you all for coming. This is one of our extra meetings for the month of August. This was one of the ones that was requested when we met 2 weeks ago to discuss some of the strategies a little bit more. I'm going to just do some quick introductions. First of all, district staff, we've got Todd DeYoung over there, Christina, John, who is in back, Arno, raise your hand, Arno, Ryan, Valerie, who's out of our Bakersfield office, so someone near and close by. We've got Jessica O back there. We've got Jessica C. Did I miss anyone? Shiraz is outside. I can see him. He's around. We also have CARB staff here. We've got Justin and Scott and Vernon and Trish. Raise your a new person whose name I don't know. Natalie. Natalie's here. Is someone from the Ag Commission here? Yes, no, maybe. They might show up here in a minute. We might have, I don't know that we have anyone from the county here yet, but we might in just a minute. We have city folks here. We've got lots of city folks here. We've got Kathy and Scott and Wayne and a bunch of people around. And then, of course, our steering committee. We're glad you're here. One of the most important announcements for me that I'm going to make tonight is I want to introduce this nice lady over here in the blue dress. Her name is Crystal Love Lazard, and she is our new facilitator. She's with Institute for Local Government. It's taken us a month to get someone on board, but she is getting up to speed, but this is her first time with Shafter. She has lots of experience in facilitation, and she's going to take over in just a minute, but we may have to jump in just because this is her first time here with you guys tonight, so we're excited that you're here. And the purpose of tonight, Crystal will talk a little bit about it, but is really to try and get us moving forward to have something SERP-wise, Community Emission Reduction Plan, ready to go by the deadline that we have. So we were working very hard to do that, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. The other piece of this, I want to thank Gustavo and the individuals that worked with Gustavo. He's not here yet, but he might be coming. I want to thank John and the folks who worked with John. We have gotten lots of feedback in the last about 7 days from folks who have ideas on specific strategies. So we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight and go through kind of some new ideas that have been brought forward. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Crystal, who then is going to turn it over to Jessica and Todd. She's going to give you just a few little basics.
Thanks, Jamie. Okay. So thanks for the warm welcome. Just real quick, I'm here from the Institute for Local Government. We are a nonpartisan nonprofit. We have three parent organizations, the City Association, the County Association, and the Special Districts. So together, I represent 482 cities, 58 counties, and over 1,000 special districts with an aim to do good governance. So as the new facilitator, my goal is to get up to speed really fast on where you guys are, and just make sure that there is a clear process where everybody is heard and that everything is equitable and that we harness the knowledge in the room and really get to the goal, which is to create this SERP and get going on some actions. So any questions about me? No. Okay. I'm told that there's food in the back, which you're welcome to get at any time. The restrooms are out the door and to the left. And I, as a good meeting processor, always strive to end on time. So we're going to keep this meeting moving forward. It's scheduled to end at 7:30. So we're going to go through a presentation of the new strategies that have been suggested. And then we're going to have some dialogue about that. And then we're going to go into what I think Jamie was calling homework, where you can write comments or notes on the slides and ask questions of clarification to any of the district staff or CARB or each other and just sort of get to the point where we feel good about all the strategies that are being suggested. That's really the main focus of this meeting. And then any new strategies that you can think of, if they're not totally formed tonight, I think we ask, the district is asking that you submit those draft strategies by the end of this week. So next Monday, because I'm catching up, there's a meeting next Monday on the 12th. There's also a meeting on the 26th. So next Monday, we would really come, and the district will come with a SERP for us to really look at and dig into. So it feels fast, but I know you guys have done a lot of work, and we're just moving the ball now. So any questions about that sort of very loose agenda? Okay, I'm going to hand it over to Jessica.
Awesome. Can everybody hear me okay? All right. So we've had a lot of ideas and comments about the various emission reduction and exposure reduction strategies come in. We wanted to give an extra special thanks to everyone that submitted comment letters or worked on the comment letters. We really appreciate that. We've been trying to take all of that input and incorporate it into the measures. So we did our best effort with that in our first cut that we presented to you a couple weeks ago. We've taken the further feedback that we've received, and we've been incorporating that into the measures to update them to reflect the committee's guidance and the community's guidance. And so that's what our presentation today is about, is to really do a specific response to the suggestions we've received and to tie that into the measures that the district's developed for your feedback. So to kick off a discussion about some of our incentive measures, I'm going to turn it over to Todd DeYoung. Just a heads up, we're not going to go through all 90-some slides that's on this presentation. We're going to do kind of a high-level review of the suggestions and our responses, and then we'll have the rest of the slides there for your review and any comments and questions you have. So you're not sitting here for 90 slides, but we'll be available for questions on any of those revised measures. So with that, I'll hand it over to Todd.
All right. Thank you, Jessica. Again, my name is Todd DeYoung. I manage the district's grants and incentive programs. And since a lot of these measures have to do with new and amended incentive programs, I'm going to run through the first probably dozen or so of these slides and then turn it back over to Jessica to talk about some of the additional enhancements that we've put together. So I want to start I'll start here with one of the most important strategies that was highlighted in some of the comments that we've received, and that was the suggestion from the committee was that 100 electric car replacements for private vehicles 15 years or older, including SUVs, with electric vehicles and electric charging outlets, and the suggestion indicated that an additional $10,000 to $15,000 per vehicle would be needed with all the other state and federal incentives that are available. So what we've come with today is a proposed brand new program for Shafter residents to replace at least 100 cars through a new program. And this would provide increased incentives over any of our other additional district programs that we operate, to cover up to 90% of the cost of a new electric vehicle or a plug-in electric vehicle for qualified low-income applicants. And again, this is an additional $10,000 on top of any of the other incentives that would be available to Valley residents, and that includes the district's Drive Clean in the San Joaquin program, any federal tax credits, state rebates that are available for new vehicles. And so we anticipate with about $10,000 on top of any of these new other programs that would get to that 90% level, so that folks would only be paying about 10% of the cost of that new vehicle out of pocket. We're looking at, in addition to the vehicle incentives, we're looking at about $100,000 to install 17 new public EV chargers throughout the city of Shafter. The residential charging, there's a program right now that PG&E operates that can provide up to $800 per resident to install electric vehicle charging infrastructure in their home. So we'll connect residents with that program and help them through that process. And then the final piece to this measure is really to just provide some increased outreach. We want to make sure that residents of Shafter understand what's available, how to apply, and all of the different programs that they're eligible for to make this program really successful. So the next measure that we wanted to take a look at had to do with a suggestion about providing solar for residents in the city of Shafter. The suggestion was that 250 low-income homes have solar installed on them. There are federal tax credits. There's a disadvantaged community program that pays nearly 100% of the cost of the solar for these disadvantaged communities and these low-income residents. And so the proposed measure, as we're looking at it today, would be that the district would take on the role of coordinating with the PUC and its partner agency, Grid Alternatives, to ensure that the community residents understand this program, know it's available, and how to apply to it. We're thinking of possibly having a workshop where we bring Grid Alternatives and we bring residents in, and they can talk about the program and talk about the requirements and really understand what's available to them. A couple of the specific programs that are available, the first one is the Disadvantaged Community Single-Family Homes Program, or the DAC-SASH program, and that's for single-family residences. And then there's also a Solar on Multifamily Affordable Housing, or SOMA, program, and that's for apartment complexes and multi-unit residences within the city of Shafter. So this is really the district bringing together those resources to make sure that we can hit that target of at least 250 homes here in the Shafter area having solar. The next suggestion that came from the community was the Community Solar Green Tariff Program. Now, this is a program that's operated by PG&E, and what this does is PG&E, on behalf of residents, goes and buys green power, essentially, renewable energy, and then provides a 20% discount to the residents that sign up for that program. And this is available to residents even if they're already taking advantage of another program, such as the CARE program. So this is on top of whatever discounts they would be eligible for under that program. This is a PUC program, and so in the proposed measure, again, the district will be assisting and coordinating with the PUC to make sure that residents here understand what's available to them, how to apply, how to get signed up for the program, and how to start taking advantage of those programs. There's another program that is very similar to this. There's actually two solar tariff programs. The first one is basically just a 20% discount for anybody who signs up. The second one, actually, it requires that the solar installation where the power is produced that is purchased for this program, that the solar installations actually be within 5 miles of the disadvantaged community. And so there's a potential for jobs if there's solar constructed in these areas, and these are more generation, solar generation for the grid. So there's a potential jobs aspect to that program. But again, it would be the district coordinating with the PUC and its implementing partners on how to get residents connected with these programs. So this next measure, again, has to do with light-duty vehicles. The suggestion was that 20 electric vehicles are placed throughout Shafter in neighborhoods, and that these vehicles with a good 150 to 250-mile range are made available for rent at a subsidized rate to low-income residents. And so what we're proposing under this program is $250,000 in funding. For a local partner, there are several nonprofits and other agencies that actually run these sorts of car sharing programs, and the district is actually involved in several in other areas in the district. For example, Mio Car and Green Commuter operate these sorts of low-income car sharing programs already throughout the valley. So we would be hopefully leveraging some of the work that we've already done, leveraging some of the other funding that's available out there through the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund or Cap and Trade to make this program work with the idea of putting these electric vehicles out in the community and allowing a car sharing program that's coordinated through a central agency. So this next measure is very much related to the first measure, where we're talking about getting 100 electric vehicles out into the community. What we don't want is for people to jump at an electric vehicle without really understanding how it can and can't work for them and their families. So what we're proposing here is $200,000 in local funding for partners to deploy 10 vehicles, and families could essentially check out or rent a vehicle for an extended period of time to make sure that an electric vehicle can work for their family. Can it get them to work? Can it get them to school? Will it serve their family's needs? And so after, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, if an electric vehicle makes sense to these folks, then we would move them to that next step of replacing their vehicle, you know, in that first measure where we're talking about the 100 new electric vehicles in the city of Shafter. We really wanted to make sure that folks in the community understand, you know, the benefits and the limitations of electric vehicles before they make that jump. Now there may be residents that understand from the very beginning that an electric vehicle will work for them. And so, you know, we're not going to force people to go through this and have a vehicle on loan for a month before they make that decision. But we wanted to offer this as an additional service to the residents of Shafter to make sure that technology works for them. And so this was another suggestion from the committee about a community dial-a-ride utilizing electric vehicles. And so the proposed measure would be to provide up to $400,000 to invest with the local transit agency to bring those electric vehicle dial-a-rides to the city of Shafter. So the district proposes to work with the appropriate transit agencies to make that happen and to get those vehicles that meet the duty cycle and the expected range of operations of a dial-a-ride service into the city of Shafter. So this is a measure and a suggestion that we heard related to rerouting heavy-duty trucks away from impacted areas of the city of Shafter and the surrounding area. Specifically, the suggestion was to reroute trucks that use Lurdo Highway through the two stop signs adjacent to the elementary school, to reroute those somewhere else, perhaps Tulare and Riverside Avenues, away from sensitive populations. The district doesn't have land use authority, but we are working with the city, the county, land use agencies, Caltrans, and other appropriate transportation agencies to communicate the steering community's feedback in this area, and then hopefully receive the agency feedback in time to include in the SERP. So the district's commitment here would be to make sure that the community's feedback is taken into account, and then hopefully provide that feedback to the SERP document. So this next measure was a suggestion that several school buses at Richland Elementary and surrounding schools be provided with electric school buses and replacing old diesel buses. I'm happy to announce, and I think we talked about this at the last meeting, that we've already got 3 electric school bus replacements going for the city of Shafter for the Richland School District. So what we're proposing is a total of 8, so an additional 5 school buses within the city of Shafter. Now that could be the Kern High School District, it could be the Richland Elementary or Richland School District, excuse me. But we're proposing to replace 8 aging diesel school buses with all electric buses in the city with a funding amount of up to $3.2 million, which is essentially about $400,000 per bus, which covers roughly 90 to 95% of that bus. So this next measure, the suggestion was that oil wells and related equipment within the 7-mile radius, which use stationary internal combustion engines, should be converted to electric motors if the electrical grid is available within 1,000 feet. And what we're proposing today is to provide incentives to convert those IC engines that drive different things like pump jacks to electric motors and oil wells where feasible, and then to that related equipment within the 7-mile radius. What we have to do is we have to do a little bit more looking at the inventory to make sure that these are feasible projects, see the kind of engines that are out there, and see if they can be electrified, if there's access to electricity and those sorts of things. So we will be coming back with a more detailed plan on how that will work. And then additionally, we do have some regulatory enhancements to the IC engine rule under the new PM 2.5 plan. That rulemaking process hasn't begun yet, but as it moves forward, the committee's input will be definitely important as we move through that. And so this one is similar, but it's related to agricultural irrigation pump electrification. And again, the suggestion was that farmers using IC engines to pump water within the 7-mile radius and within 500 feet of electrical grid should be given a 90% subsidized electric motor conversion opportunity. And so what we're proposing is just that. For engines where electrification is feasible, the district will provide up to 90% incentive funding to electrify these engines and provide the necessary infrastructure, and that includes line extensions, transformers, and all those related expenses. The 90% is well above any district program that we've ever operated for internal combustion engines related to agriculture. So this is a brand new program. This is over and above what we've done in other areas. That 90% incentive is about probably 30 to 40% more than we would normally pay. And then again, there are, in the district's PM 2.5 plan, there are additional regulatory backstops that are being worked on. So this next measure is a suggestion that wood chipping on site instead of burning. So essentially no ag burning would be allowed within the 7-mile radius, and that subsidies would be available for grinding this material, including small amounts of material due to attrition. The district has operated a small pilot program, and what we're anticipating and what we're proposing to do is to significantly increase that pilot program to include up to 2,000 acres of chipped material in the Shafter area at up to $1 million investment for chipping and soil reincorporation or chipping and land application of that chipped material. And specifically in areas where the open burning of this biomass would impact the air quality of the community of Shafter. And I am now going to have Jessica come up and explain just a few more of the measures.
Awesome. Thanks, Todd. So we did receive a suggestion that JP Oil would reduce their current flaring levels, averaged over the past 5 years, by 90%. We wanted to let everyone know the district is currently working through a public rule amendment process for our Rule 9311. And we wanted to invite the steering committee and interested members of the public to be a part of that process, because this is exactly the type of source we're going to be looking at controlling through this rule amendment. Additionally, the steering committee's comments will be taken into account as we're going through that rule development process. Looking at high-speed rail emissions, we received a suggestion that the high-speed rail construction within the 7-mile radius would use Tier 4 engines in all off-road construction equipment. So the high-speed rail construction is the authority over that is the high-speed rail authority. And so based on this suggestion, we actually created a new measure to be included as part of the SERP, where we would work with CARB and the High-Speed Rail Authority to communicate the steering committee's suggestion and see what the High-Speed Rail Authority can do. In addition to that, we'll be continuing to seek local clean air projects in Kern County and specifically in Shafter that we can use mitigation funding provided by the High-Speed Rail Authority to further improve air quality in Shafter. So that, if you look in the complete list of strategies at the end of the packet, this is actually a new measure that we're including in the SERP based on suggestions. We also received a suggestion. We've heard a lot of concerns from the committee about the impact of dairies on Shafter residents. We received a specific suggestion that the 10 factory dairies to the west of Shafter would agree not to empty or aerate their manure lagoons during the months of December and January. So because PM2.5 formation is NOx driven, the formation of ammonia nitrate is NOx driven, not driven by ammonia. We're not proposing to do that because the significant decrease in ammonia will not decrease PM2.5 substantially. However, reductions in emissions from dairies are going to be targeted through the SERP through alternative manure management strategies, which can include measures like moving to dry manure management, which gets rid of manure lagoons that's dry and scraping, and then also installing dairy digesters. Emissions from dairies are further targeted by the measures listed on the slide. So we've got feed mixer electrification, which is reducing diesel PM, conservation management, education, and outreach that can reduce fugitive dust from dairies, irrigation pump conversion to electric, like Todd talked about, and then those alternative manure management strategies. So we've got a host of measures that are targeted for dairy emission reductions, which will achieve PM2.5 emission reductions as well as ammonia. Moving on to residential wood burning. We had a lot of concerns from the committee about this as well. Specifically, we received a suggestion that that as part of the SERP, EPA wood stoves or inserts will not be subsidized in Shafter. We're going to be doing that as part of the PM2.5 plan implementation and the new rule that just got passed. That rule was passed in June, and we'll be implementing it in the 2019 and 2020 season. So that's going to mean fewer burn days, lower curtailment thresholds, and further benefits to the Shafter air quality. Because Shafter is a hotspot area in Kern County, we won't be providing the subsidy for EPA-certified wood stoves and inserts. So that's already checking the box. Additionally, we'll be kind of amending our Burn Clean incentive program to allow electric heat pumps to be incentivized through our incentive funding program. Moving on to facility inspections, we had the suggestion that the district conduct monthly inspections of Plains LPG. Our response to that is not just focusing on Plains LPG, but every facility that's had a violation in the community is going to be subject to increased enforcement. So it's kind of more health protective, broader application. And so each facility with an emission violation over the past 3 years will be inspected at least twice per calendar year for the next 5 years, or until the facility has had 4 consecutive inspections without an emission violation. Pushing through to oil well setbacks. This is a measure the district does not have land use authority over, but we are committing to work with the city and other responsible land use agencies to communicate the steering committee's suggestion and see if that setback can be implemented. So we'll be committing to include the responsible land use agencies what we can do for that in the SERP. If we can't do anything, we're committing to put that response in the SERP as well. Tree planting and urban greening. This is something that I think across the board everyone recognizes is a really great thing to have more trees in an urban community. There's a lot of funding available statewide for this. A lot of cap and trade funding can be utilized for this. So instead of trying to source AB 617 funding for that, we're hoping to leverage available state funding and bring that to Shafter to increase urban greening in the community. And based on this measure, we did amend the measure in our complete list of measures to specifically have the goal of 1,000 trees planted in Shafter. So electric yard trucks. We had the specific suggestion that the almond hauler just north of Shafter on Highway 43 would be given incentives to purchase 2 electric yard trucks. So as part of those measures we presented last week, $4 million is going to be available to help support the conversion of electric yard trucks and diesel yard trucks and TRUs to electric units. So that's definitely something we can do. We can provide specific outreach to that facility to see if they're interested in these incentives, and based on their interest, move forward from there. And finally, moving into pesticides. So we definitely understand pesticides as a top concern with the community. Based on the steering committee's feedback, CARB and DPR are committing to develop a range of measures for inclusion in the SERP. We don't have those for your review at this meeting, but CARB and DPR are committing to bring those measures for committee review by the end of August. We received a really great suggestion to amend the drive clean and the San Joaquin requirements to remove the emissions requirement based on a committee member's personal experience with the program. So that's something we have to get CARB's approval to amend our program guidelines, but that's something we're going to be looking into based on the specific suggestion. And finally, we received, you know, a bunch of other suggestions from steering committee members, and that resulted in kind of our original list of measures that we presented to the committee over the last, you know, few steering committee meetings. Air filtration systems in schools, vegetative barriers was something we heard a lot of interest in. Partnering with the city of Shafter for road paving, sidewalk implementation. Those are all things that are listed out in those measures in the back of your packet, and that we'll be working with the city, other partner agencies, and the steering committee to implement in Shafter. So don't be scared. We're not going to go through all of these measures, but everything that we presented to you last week or 2 weeks ago now has been updated. Some of the measures are the same. Some of the things we just went over resulted in changes to the measures, so I'd encourage you to review this complete list of updated CERT measures. There's a couple of slides, like the high-speed rail slide is new. There's a new sidewalk measure, things like that. And then there's a couple of areas where goals or emission reduction numbers have changed based on the committee's feedback. So we're going to pause for questions. Todd and I are available for questions, and we've got a whole host of other folks that can answer questions you have related to this process. And I think Crystal's going to kind of guide us through that process.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump in. I think I heard that there may have been some strategies that were submitted this week, like as early as or recently as today. Those may not be reflected in the slides you just saw, but they will be incorporated into the SERP that everybody gets on Monday. So what I'd like to do is, obviously everybody's already writing in this, but well done. Pull up your slides if you don't have them already. And when you make a comment or a suggestion or ask a question, if you could say what strategy you're addressing, that would help everybody know contextually where you are. Christine is going to take notes here. And if you have something that doesn't relate specifically to a strategy, but you just really need to say it, that's fine. We will capture it over in the parking lot and deal with it when we get to whatever the timing is of whatever the thing is. So any questions about where we go?
I don't have an actual question or comment. Maybe it's on the parking lot. Maybe it is on the question, but I do have it for the SERPs ideas, bringing it up. Mm-hmm. In the charter document we got at the beginning of the process, it stated that government officials can take action and are encouraged to participate in and serve full to the committee, except that they serve as an advisory role in the, except that they serve in, sorry, I'm trying to write my notes, as the advisory role and in the final consensus building and the decision-making process. So making it clear that for the SERPs, the government officials are not allowed to bring any ideas to it, or they can't vote for the consensus for finalizing the SERPs idea.
I think the intent of the charter was for them to give advice, give input. I think they are to be involved in this process, but their kind of vote in the consensus building is not equal to the steering committee members.
So I just wanted to make that clear.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point. Okay, because this is getting down to that place, right, where you're making recommendations and we're coming up with the SERP. So these are really good questions of clarification about roles and responsibility and authority and whatnot. Comments on the strategies themselves?
Hi, I just had a question on the buses. I'm trying to find the slide number. Slide 10. So I know that the Richland District's getting buses. Can this also be extended to Shafter High School because they also have buses? And then we also have a new school, Grimway Academy, so they don't have any old buses to replace. Okay. So I don't know how that would work.
So, yeah, the answer, to your first part of the question is absolutely this would, am I too close? Absolutely, this would apply to the high school district or in the high school and Shafter. And we'll definitely be working with, is it Kern High School District?
They're under Kern.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's me or you.
So, yeah, we'll definitely be working with them on that. And what was the second school you had mentioned?
Grimway Academy is somewhat new to the area.
Okay.
So I don't think they have any old buses to turn in.
Right, right. I think there are potentially opportunities there. That's okay. Something we can definitely look at. Depending on if it's a public or a private school, we'll have to. There are different rules.
It's a charter, public.
Public charter. Okay. Great. We would just have to sort of overcome the replacement aspect, but I think that's something that we could definitely look at in this program.
Okay. Yeah. And I just had one more question, or maybe statement on slide 85 on the idling reduction. I see that we are going to promote it more on schools, library, senior centers, but I was wondering if we could do a little bit more outreach in the community, just as I've seen people sit idling at restaurants when you're trying to eat outside, just overall community awareness of idling and the harms of it.
Yeah, that's definitely a good suggestion, absolutely.
Christina's taking notes, and if you see her capture your comment in a way that doesn't reflect your intent, please speak up. There's no harm feeling. I mean, it's just the comments. Or if at the very end you're like, oh man, I really wanted to amend that, just come over and like ask her to write something or just make a note or something. But these comments are being captured. I'm going to go to Tom first and then Maria.
Okay. So I'm glad even at this late date, the Air District is responding to our proposals. Just looking at the money that's going to be spent, like on locomotives, $5 million for a couple locomotives that run up and down the state or the valley. Hopefully not out of the valley, but we can't control that. And the rail movers, $4 million. That's $9 million right there. That's $9 million that's going to very incrementally affect the air quality in Shafter. $9 million. We're not going to see a change in our air quality because of that $9 million. Now, valley-wide, I admit there would probably be a change in the air quality overall because of that $9 million, but not in Shafter. And I'm sure most of us here are looking for this $44 million to be spent in ways that improve Shafter's air quality directly and significantly. So I recommend strongly against these locomotive items, this $9 million, $9.3 million. And then on the dairies, $6.5 million for five dairies to get electric dairy feed mix and equipment. $2 million for dairy trucks to become electric. Okay, I realize there's five dairies within the seven-mile radius. They're out there. The Air District has said we're not going. I mean, I want to see monitoring of these dairies before we commit millions of dollars to them. The inventory doesn't specify anything, really, from these dairies. We had a number once on ammonia, but it was from all agriculture. It wasn't even specific to the dairies. We need to have 1 year of monitoring on-site, fence line, or even on the dairy if possible, of the type of emissions and a really good estimate of the truck traffic and where it goes before we start aiming at those dairies, millions of dollars. Now, instead of those millions, which are already 17 million, getting close to half the money you've proposed to spend, when we talk about solar on homes and electric heating, which has to go along with the solar, not just in replacing wood stoves, electric heating, electric heat pumps that both air condition, so you can close your windows out from all the dust and pollution we get, plus heat the home in the winter. Heating of homes and buildings in the winter in Shafter is a very significant air pollutant during the winter when PM 2.5 levels are at their highest. It's over 10 tons, and it's all coming from 4 short months when we heat, because we don't heat more than 4 months out of the year, really, practically. And so in the inventory, you know, it's like 10 tons of NOx from heating buildings just in Shafter. If we can put a significant dent into that heating and change it to electric that is supplied by solar, because you're proposing solar, money needs to be designated for a project like that. Millions.
Thanks, Tom.
That's not all. And no. Millions needs to be designated for putting solar on homes, because despite all the government subsidies, there's not going to be enough there. I just named $17 million we don't want to do, some of us. That money should all go to the solar programs, the electrification programs, and electric vehicles here in Shafter specifically. And money can be dedicated to trees too, besides all the subsidies for trees that there are. There still is going to be more funding needed. So let's see money dedicated to those things that will improve quality of life right here in Shafter.
Thanks, Tom. Okay, just as a reminder, we're going to go quickly through this, but there's going to be time after for you to write on your PowerPoint and put your name on the top, and then submit any additional comments at that point as well. I just want to do a quick make sure we go through everyone. Maria.
Okay, and that's a great question. There are a couple of ways that we look at income level, and they are essentially some percentage of the federal poverty level. These are published figures from the federal government. Anybody that falls below either a household or a specific individual or a family that falls below a certain income level based on the federal poverty level would be considered low income. The enabling legislation of AB 617 identifies both disadvantaged communities and low-income communities. So that information is already out there and it's established, and we can certainly get information on how that is derived. But it's based on a certain level above or below the federal poverty level.
There's a button.
There you go. Okay, cool. So I definitely don't want to miss this opportunity to make sure that we talk about this. As I look at these strategies, something I don't see like written now is like once like all this money that's allocated specifically for Shafter coming from 617 and any fines generated as like enhanced enforcement and looking at, you know, notice of violations. Once the air district starts going down that path, can we not miss the opportunity to have all those violations and incentive funding be redirected only into like the 7 mile radius, the area of Shafter? So it's like, you know, the return of investment is all within the city of Shafter, and not like, you know, not downplaying other communities, because there's a lot of disadvantaged communities in San Joaquin Valley. But I mean, 607 was chosen as one of the first 10 communities. So I don't know how or if it's a regulatory process or I don't know what kind of process, but anything that is gained as far as monetary compensation because of fines and violations or 617 be redirected back into this community.
Okay.
Thanks, Gustavo. Okay, I'm going to take one more comment, and then we're going to talk to the nice people from the public that are all waiting. Two more comments, I lied. Two more comments.
With all this, I just don't see a cost-benefit number. I see a lot of different millions and millions of dollars, but I don't see a cost-benefit. Is there a way to kind of give some sort of bang for the buck measurement as far as pollution reduced?
Yeah, a lot of these measures, it's a little bit like comparing apples to oranges when you're talking about cost effectiveness. Generally speaking, coming from my world and incentives, the most cost-effective emission reduction strategies are diesel emission reduction strategies. You're replacing an old piece of diesel equipment with either a new very clean diesel or electric or natural gas piece of equipment. Those are generally going to get you the biggest bang for your buck in terms of criteria pollutant reductions, NOx and PM. There's a lot of different factors that go into what we're looking at here in terms of exposure, you know, distance to sensitive receptors. So there's a lot of ways to look at cost benefit. You know, like I said, the one that I look at in my line of work is generally dollars per ton of emissions reduced. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at. And again, it's generally what you're going to see, the criteria pollutant emission reductions, which affect overall air quality in the valley, are generally, you know, NOx and PM reductions. And the biggest NOx and PM reductions generally come from diesel emission reduction programs. But again, there's a lot of different ways to look at cost benefit in terms of, you know, even when you're looking at things like the school filter program, it doesn't reduce emissions, but it reduces exposure to emissions. So it's very important. So there's lots of different ways to look at that. And it's hard given so many different types of strategies. Some are, you know, some are criteria pollutant reductions, some are exposure reductions, some are exposure avoidance, you know, in terms of rerouting trucks. So it's hard to compare them all in one list. But generally speaking, it's you get the biggest bang for your buck from diesel emission reductions.
Okay, last question.
You know, I think a comment and then maybe a question. I want to thank the district. I think that we're getting much closer, and I think this is getting. And I see some heads nodding, so I think we're, you know, maybe we're getting someplace that we can actually get this, get something out that we can get some consensus on. I think one other comment I'd like to make is that the district has the sort of ominous task of as the first AB 617 community in the valley. That we're going to have to somehow quantify how effective this is for how much money we spent. So there's I don't think that's going to be all that difficult to do. We can check air quality or the communities around us versus what it is, you know, in my backyard after we spend this money, and either it will have been a good investment or it won't be, and it'll be out for everyone to see. And I think we should sort of think about it that way. And then sort of piggybacking on Gustavo's comment about, you know, money coming back, I know that in this community there's a fairly large amount of indirect source rule money that's spent as well. And as a 617 community, I'd like for the district to look at maybe making sure that the indirect source rule funds that are generated in this community stay in this community, and then we have some way to account for that. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to switch now to what I think is all members of the public and then some technical experts from CARB and other places. Again, same instructions. If you can be as specific as possible about what you're making a comment on, that helps us just track it. If you have a general comment, that's fine. We'll just put it up in a different place. So we're going to do 15, 20 minutes. Please be brief. And then after this, what we're going to do is break into some individual where you do one-on-one where you can read this, make comments on the draft strategies, and ask questions of CARB or the district or each other, and still, again, submit your input. So we're not limiting to this now, but does anybody in the general public seating gallery have any questions or comments they'd like to make?
Hi, Lois Henry with BizFed Central Valley. I have several questions. Most of them are sort of in the sort of indirect aspect of these strategies. Most of the strategies that involve giving people or loaning people electric vehicles and paying public money for putting electric charging stations in, who pays for the power after that gets going? And on the ride, jumping in a car and taking it around, who pays for the liability if someone crashes that car, steals it, DUI? And on the trees, the sigma issue, just wondering how the water is going to be accounted for. And I was also, I think somebody asked this earlier, but I didn't catch it. Are there no idling rules being considered for schools, et cetera, and drive-thrus?
Christina, that was a lot. Did you catch all those?
We've got five. I know Todd can answer the first two, I think, which is who pays for electricity and liability on things like MioCar.
Yeah, definitely. And those are great questions. So generally speaking, when public charging infrastructure is installed, it's not necessarily free. It's pennies on the dollar in terms of charging an electric vehicle versus putting gas in your car. But it's definitely not free. It could be a dollar or two an hour. There are a bunch of different ways to structure electric vehicle infrastructure. There are companies that, as a business, see that as a value to their customers. And so if it's outside of their business, they will pay the electricity for that charging infrastructure. In other cases, it's built into the amount that they charge per hour or per kilowatt of charging. So they recoup the energy in that way. With residential charging, that is borne by the resident. They'll have to charge their own vehicle and pay for the electricity to do so. And so there's a couple of different ways that it gets recouped. It's generally not free, unless it's subsidized by a business or by a local government agency. And in terms of another great question about the liability for car share programs, the liability insurance is built into the operating costs for that program. So we would partner with an agency or an organization that would manage that program on our behalf and on behalf of the residents of Shafter. And so there is a cost to purchasing that liability insurance for that type of program, and it would be borne by this program. That would be one of the operating costs, the cost of actually operating a program like this. So you have to think about factoring in those types of things when you're opening up a new program. It wouldn't be like the Air District buys 20 cars and just spreads them out in the city and everybody can go jump in one. It would be managed by an organization, by an entity that would take care of all those things.
And I'll take the next two. So I'm happy to report. Oh, uno momentos, por favor. the drive-through and the no idling. I'm happy to report that all of the schools in Shafter are healthier living schools, and they either have or will have no idling signage, plus an educational plan for parents to get them not to idle. It's part of a bigger program that encourages them to look at air quality when deciding whether or not to let kids outside of schools. If air quality is poor, we don't want them outside playing. Drive-throughs, we try to educate folks on the no idling. I will tell you, getting people out of a drive-through is one of the most difficult things that we face. People love drive-throughs. We are doing a push in 2 weeks, a back-to-school push, which is when we have some of our worst air quality. And part of those messages are to avoid the drive-throughs. You'll start seeing some ads that say specifically avoid drive-throughs. We have talked to a handful of corporations in the past to see how open they were to maybe closing drive-throughs or having in-store signage encouraging people to come inside. No one was interested. We talked to both Starbucks and McDonald's, and we couldn't even get high enough to talk to anyone who had any real say-so. We just heard there's no way we're shutting down our drive-throughs. We could talk to the city. I think Shafter's relatively low drive-through per person compared to some other cities in the area. So I don't know if they have any interest in limiting drive-throughs or that type of thing. They are a service for some folks that maybe can't get out of a car. And as far as water, John or Shiraz, has there been a discussion on the water issues that are coming, the sigma issues that are coming, and how that impacts some of the tree planting? I don't know that we've looked into that. That may just be something that we need to investigate a little bit further.
Yeah, we'll need to keep investigating that. That's a good question. We'll
That's
have
a
to
good
keep
point.
Yeah. We'll keep that in mind. Thank you.
I do know, actually, a little bit about urban greening in that when you do the tree planting, you do drought-resistant planting, and you look for trees with low water consumption. And you do, when you make your bid for that very competitive grant program application money, you have to show where the water is coming from and how you're going to conserve water. So it's an element of that application that you would submit to the Natural Resources Agency to get the funding. So it's looked at. Any other questions in the public?
Hi, Raymond Rodriguez. I'm an environmental engineer, graduate at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo after I served the U.S. Navy. So one of the projects I looked at in San Luis Obispo is they no longer have drive-thrus. And the reason why they did that is because they thought emissions would be more if they would have idling cars. And they didn't take into consideration the catalyst temperature of the exhaust system for vehicles, that they needed to maintain a certain temperature in order to destroy the emissions coming out of that engine. So they realized, unfortunately, by making people park and then the car cool down and then start back up, they actually created more emissions. So I would want to just investigate that a little more and just see if that is applicable. That was a long time ago. Maybe it's different.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is still the case, and there's so many variables. It depends on the age of the car. It depends on how long you idle in the vehicle. All of that type of thing is definitely a factor when looking at drive-thrus. But the biggest factor is that people love them. People love them.
Okay.
Crystal, we had one more question right here perfect. That I think she thought she was going to be able to speak, and we cut her off.
Sí, yo quería preguntar si para poner los paneles solares, si van a ser trabajadores de aquí de Chapter, y van a recibir algún entrenamiento.
That's a great question, and to be honest with you, I don't know if we've thought that far in advance yet. I think that that's something that we'll have to talk with the folks that are operating these programs to see if there is some sort of local workforce development or workforce training aspect to that program. I do know in one of the PG&E tariff programs that there was, and this is more not for the residential solar side, but for the energy production side, there was a workforce development, workforce training component to that, but not necessarily for the residential program. But that's definitely something we can talk with the PUC and with Grid Alternatives about. Grid Alternatives runs that program, so that's definitely something we can talk to them about.
Crystal.
Okay. So are there any quick questions of clarification? And then we're going to move to the whole discussion. I'm going to go Tom and then.
Okay. You talk about a few million dollars for, I don't know how many, low dust nut harvesters. All right. Well, that's probably good if it's all done in the 7 miles. But we still don't have an answer on if you're going to measure dust, PM10, here in Shafter. This year, this fall, during the almond harvest, so that when a dozen or more of these low-dust harvesters are in place next year with all this millions of dollars, we see a difference. So I need an answer. We need an answer tonight on if our request many times over the last couple months, are you going to measure PM10 for the whole year, just like you do in Corcoran and Bakersfield, for the community of Shafter, so we can see if this money makes any difference. Sure.
And so I'll have to defer to the monitoring folks on that specific question, but what I can tell you is that we, in our low-dust harvester program right now, we're actually developing a test methodology, and we're going to go out this harvest season, so starting next month, and we're going to run that equipment side-by-side with its non-low-dust equivalent.
We know how it works, but we want to know if it makes a difference in Shafter.
Okay.
One more
Just real quick, if I could just respond to the PM10 monitoring question. So as we talked about, I think a couple weeks ago, we're planning to have an exercise with the full committee to talk about air monitoring again, to look at the different assets that we have to work with, the equipment that we have. We want the full committee's feedback on where some of that equipment could be placed within the boundary, within the 7-mile radius, to get everybody's thoughts together. And as a part of that exercise, we can get people's thoughts on PM10 if that's of interest of others in the committee, if they'd like to see that happen as well and where that should happen. So when we do that exercise, we'll get that concrete feedback from the full committee and then move forward from there.
12 of us already signed a paper asking for PM10 monitoring over a month ago. So we can bring it up again. The majority of this committee has already asked for it.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
I really do want to break into the individual, write your comments down. Any questions, please document your questions and comments, and then lean on all the district staff, all the CARB staff, and really get those answers that you're looking for, Tom. But then we're going to move into this quick.
I just had a quick comment. For a lot of these incentives for the community, it's just for low-income community, and not all of the community are low-income, just certain percentages are, but like maybe hiring the criteria to also include the middle class to be part of those incentives would be highly recommended for the steering committee, well, as the steering committee.
Thank you. Okay.
I just had a quick question on slide 80. It has to do with air filtration systems in community schools. Wasn't real sure how much these high-efficiency filters, all these costs, because it's only allocated for $100,000 right now, and we have 6 schools in Shafter. So I was wondering if that could be upped if needed.
Okay. Christina's got that. Okay. I watched this last week in Fresno happen, and it's pretty fun. So I'm going to move us into the next phase, which is what Jamie was calling homework before. But this is where you – sorry. Oh, homework. But it's fun. So – please write down, and I know several of you have these burning questions or these wouldn't it be great, please document them. Again, like we said in the beginning, this week by Friday is sort of the goal to get all revisions to the strategies or any new strategies in so they can be incorporated over the weekend into that document on Monday. So take some time. We're giving you lots of time. You're about 55 minutes in all. To really look at these, read through them. I know there's a lot. There's like 80 of them. And lean on the district staff. Lean on CARB. Ask questions. Members of the public, do the same thing.
There are extras in back.
There's extras in back.
Write your name on
them. Yes, write your name on them. So, and move around. Feel free, you're not wedded to the chair that you're in, feel free to talk to each other. If anyone asked a question here that maybe sparked a comment or another question, move over and talk to that person. Shake it up. Hello. Okay, we have about 15 minutes left. 15 minutes. But if you have already completed your comments, feel free to write your name on the top and leave them at the front table, and you can go. Leaving early is always allowed. So, but we will wrap this up in about 15 minutes. Thank you. All right, let's wrap it up. Okay, thank you so much for hanging in there. Are there any final questions, any final remarks? We have about 2 minutes left. I want to thank you. We absolutely always end on time. But is there anything that anybody wanted to share? Anything that came up from your discussions in your group? Gustavo?
Yes, very quickly, just some of the stuff that we talked about, looking at the SERPs and the different strategies, is if we look at this sheet here and we start looking at the incentive funding, it's a lot of money, right? And so part of the discussion that we had is before the air district and the state starts cutting checks on a lot of these strategies that there is no background information on as far as air quality, baselines, metrics, goals. I think it's very important to look at where we need to monitor first before we start, you know, handing out some checks. So I think it's very important. And we kind of zoned out a preliminary list, but we want obviously to have this discussion with the entire steering committee on which ones would be, like someone quoted, the biggest bang for your buck, you know?
No, that's great. Just as a reminder, if you have any comments on the existing 80-plus strategies, any new strategies, please submit them to the Air District by this Friday, because next Monday what I would love to do is look at them all and start putting them in some sort of a priority ranking or getting some feedback on that and really dig into some of these next steps. Any other final thoughts? Well, I just want to thank you, because, again, I just sort of parachuted in here with not knowing everything. So thank you so much for hosting me. I will see you guys next Monday, the 12th, and then also the 26th. Because, like, who doesn't want to do this all the time? Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.